We gotta spread this stuff around. Let's put it on the internet.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
Great heavens! What kind of radio show is this?
It's interesting, yeah. I'm in a lot of ways, I share a lot of your perspective, where it's like, I've never been one of those people who wanted a TV show or anything. I've never tried to do anything like that. I think I filmed one terrible thing like 10 years ago, and after that I was like, I don't want to do this. I don't want to do this. So, but to me, yeah, so it's always been kind of fascinating, like the people that want to, that we talked about this at the beginning, we're kind of circling back around, but it's good to sort of grist for the mill, but it's like people like who want to be UFO famous, it's like, there's no, or famous like you on a TV show, like a ghost hunting TV show. It's like, what is the, I don't see the thrill. I have a friend, he was on Ancient Aliens, and I'm like, well, he was really happy about it, and I was happy for him, but it was like, I would never go on Ancient Aliens, because like my brother would never stop, I would never hear the end of it for the rest of my life. Like, he would just bust my balls. That alone isn't worth being on the History Channel for 30 seconds. It's like forever, you know? We go out to eat, the waitress comes over, hey, you might have seen my brother on Ancient Aliens. It's like, dude, you don't have to tell everybody we meet just to fucking embarrass me. So that's my sole reason.
Well, and the other thing is, too, is when you're, like, main talent on a network show, especially a reality show or a paranormal reality show, when you're the talent, right? Like, it's not fun. Like, it's not a fun life. You know, when we were filming Ghost Stalkers is a good example just because we were talking about it. You know, we would fly into a town. I would be reading all of the copious notes that we had on the case. I would be trying to track down more notes from myself the entire time I flew into the town. We'd fly into the town. We would interview like 6 or 7 local people. We'd have to set up. We'd have to investigate that night. We'd have to break down, interview more people the next day, investigate again, shoot the rest of the like B-roll that was going to be shown on the episode, get back on a plane and fly to the next location. Like there's no, you don't fucking sleep. You don't eat well.
Yeah.
You're stressed out.
It sounds very inorganic.
Yeah. It's not fun. And people are like, oh, I wish I could do that. No, it's terrible.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, well, yeah, you're not really – it takes the sort of the – go ahead.
And unless you're in control of all of it, unless you're in control of the editing and the sound and everything, you're going to be unhappy with the result because – it's someone who doesn't know you trying to figure out who you are. Every show that I've ever been on, I am portrayed as this like very stoic, wizened guy who like is, you know, very calm and rational about stuff. I'm a fucking weirdo. Like I chain smoke cigarettes and get drunk and I talk about fucking aliens and frogmen and robots. Like I'm a weirdo. But they can't show that on television because they craft the narrative of who each person is.
Yeah, it's very frustrating. I wish that, you know, I just wish they had more imagination. Like there are a lot of people, a lot of talented people in the paranormal community that it's just like, if they just kind of like what you said with you, where they were like, we want to do it, whatever you want to do. It's like, then just let him do what he wants to do. And if it, let it sink or swim, you know? Like,
yeah.
Ride on the courage of John's convictions. Have some guts.
Yeah, I'll tell you, it was really funny because I was filming, I was doing a guest spot on someone else's show. And during a lunch break when we weren't filming, I got into this really heated argument about demons with one of the cast members. To the point of where, like, everybody in the lunchroom was, I mean, it got, the fight was raging. Like, we were screaming at the top of our lungs at each other. And I was like, I don't even know if they're going to let me be on this episode now that I've gotten into this position. Like we are screaming at each other. And what happened was, is like, the network almost immediately rebooked me to be on another episode. And they were like, we're going to put you two together.
Oh, God.
And I was like, because they wanted to see us fight like that on camera.
Yeah, yeah. They're probably watching you guys fight at lunch, and they're like, why aren't we filming this?
Yeah, absolutely. But the thing is by that time, by that point, by the time the network had seen that and thought it was a good idea, like, we had resolved our differences, we had come to amends, and probably weren't ever going to fight like that ever again.
Yeah, that's wild. That's wild. It makes perfect sense, though. I can totally see them thinking that, and you guys are fighting, and they're like, this is what we need.
Yeah,
we need more.
How can we monetize
more people
it?
Shouting at each other on these shows.
Yeah, how can we monetize it? That'll be good drama. People will love it.
This goes back kind of like to what I was saying in a sense, but I guess, if anyone with any clout in the entertainment world is listening, it's like all the shit that people rave about is always like fucking original. That's the crazy part about this paranormal television offerings, that it's all just the same recycled shit. It's like anything that breaks out of the pack is what's new and different. Don't they fucking know that? Haven't they figured that out yet? Instead, it's like, well, okay, this time we're just going to explore it's haunted boats. The show's just haunted boats. And then,
right.
It's like, we get like 3 seasons out of haunted boats, and then we'll move on to haunted RVs, and it's like always kind of the same template. It's very frustrating. That's why I don't watch these shows, because it's like, what's the point?
I'm cracking up because I was at a meeting with a network once, and I had given them what I thought would have been a great idea for a television show, and they just didn't – nobody at the table fucking understood what I was talking about. And it was a fairly simple concept, and they just – they're so uninterested in concepts. And I sat there, and I was frustrated, and I kind of – it's so funny that you said what you just said, because I looked at them, and I said, jokingly, I said, okay, I've got another idea. And they were like, what is it? And I said – we're going to investigate haunted planes.
There you go, yeah.
And they all perked up, and they were like, tell us more. And I was like, there have been a lot of ghost planes and accidents in the air, and we're going to do paranormal investigations in airplanes flying around where planes have disappeared. Man.
I fucking watched that. That sounds awesome.
They loved it, and they were like, but should we investigate in the actual airplanes? And then it devolved right back to like, no, you're going to go to where the planes are crashed. And I'm like, I don't want to investigate where planes have crashed. Like, that to me seems terrible. That seems horrific.
Yeah, that's horrifying.
Yeah, that's horrifying.
Yeah, that's...
But put me in a plane where a plane has vanished and let me investigate up in the air. That's interesting to me.
Yeah, that's cool. That's kind of like the ghost hunting equivalent of, like, that vomit rocket that they send, like, people up so they can feel weightlessness. That's, like, as close as you can get. That would be cool as hell. Shit.
But
well, yeah.
They're
fucking,
so limited.
Like I said,
so
I would genuinely be interested in that. That would be cool.
But they're so limited in their scope that even that was outside of their reach. You know what I mean? It's like, okay, now we've got 8 people investigating less ghosts, let's do 3 people. Okay, we've got 3, let's do 2. Okay, we've got 2, let's do 1's a guy and 1's a girl. Okay, now let's do 2 girls and 1 guy. Okay, now, like, the formula is there, and it was and it's been created, and they don't want to break from it because they're afraid, I don't even know what they're afraid of. They're afraid that nobody already watches the shows. Like I just said, the most watched show has 2 million viewers at the most. Nobody watches these shows already, and they're worried about people not watching them. Here's the other thing too. I think that people, the amount of scripting that goes into a reality show when I turned the show in that the network wanted and they told me they wanted a monster involved and we kind of got into a back and forth argument and I said I didn't want to do it anymore. They said, well, your show seems very scripted to me. And I said, well, it is scripted because I have a narrative that I'm driving for my show. It's going to go from point A to point B, and I know what the resolve is. It is scripted. And they said, well, we want a reality show. And I said, your reality shows are more scripted than my scripted show. Because when you film a paranormal reality show, when you show up on the set, they tell you, these are the people who died here. These are the people you're going to look for. these are the questions you're going to ask, and something has to happen at minute 15, something has to happen at minute 30, something has to resolve at 45, and you have to do a closing shot at the end. Like, the reality shows are already scripted out. They have writers. They have, I mean,
yeah.
That's just the way they work.
Yeah, I remember I visited a buddy of mine. He was one of the writers for Reality Hill. This was like 20 years ago when they first kind of came on. I don't know how it works now, but at the time they weren't in the Writers Guild, and they were very upset about it and trying to rectify that. So I don't even know, but yeah, they were all writers who wrote reality shows. It was just kind of like, and the fucked up part is they say writers in the credits, but no one ever bothers to ask, like, well, what do you need the writers for then, you know? I think the people just accept it. Oh, most people just think reality shows are pretty fake now at this point. So they've kind of figured that out, I think.
Yeah, that's true, too. I mean, the majority of people who are watching it know that they're just watching it for entertainment, and they're not really watching it to fire any new neurons in their head. But, I mean, luckily, we do exist in a world now where you can create your own television show or your own movie with the same, if not better, quality than what TV networks are doing. And here's the other thing too, Tim, and your listeners know this, nobody's watching TV anyway.
Yeah, I was going to say, you'd have better distribution. Like the gang on Hellier, they had the stuff on YouTube. It's like you probably have a better chance of catching someone's eye on YouTube than you would on Destination America, which is like kind of rebranded it. That was the channel your show was on, right?
Yeah, we were on Destination America, and then we got moved.
And that's like wall-to-wall paranormal shows. It's like turned into a paranormal channel. So it's like I think people, you're more apt to find the audience you want online. YouTube is bigger than Destination America, so it's a whole new world now.
I'll tell you what else is something really funny, Hellier related, that broke. This broke someone's brain, a producer's brain. I was Hellier, the second season of Hellier came out, and a television producer called me who knew me, and he said, I just watched Hellier on Amazon Prime. How much did Amazon pay them to do the show? And I said, no. They paid for it out of their own pocket. They funded it themselves. And he was like, oh, he's like, so how are they monetizing it? And I laughed and I said, they're about to give it away on YouTube for free. That's how they're monetizing it.
Exactly. But, you know, they've engendered such goodwill with the people that love the show and everything. It's created a community that you just wouldn't. That would have been achieved even if you took the same exact show and put it on regular TV. You know, it's just the penetration's not the same with cable anymore.
YouTube. Everyone has YouTube. You know, and then people who don't have YouTube have BitTorrent and they torrent sites and they rip off stuff. And if this was free to be given away anyway, so it's like I love watching because people have become so cynical about reality shows and paranormal reality shows and stuff. One of the things that cracks me up the most about people who dislike Hellier is they say, well, it's all made up, it's all fake, and nothing happens. And that argument has always seemed really weird to me because, like, if you're going to make stuff up and fake it, then you would make something happen.
Right, yeah.
Like, you don't. Right? Like, you don't make up something and totally fake nothing happening.
yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, if anything, I thought the show really captured the maddening, I don't know what you'd call it, but just sort of the waiting game of this, of all this stuff. You know, there's a lot of downtime when you're hoping to get to follow up on whatever you're being led down.
I think it was also the first time that a lot of people saw, oh, this can be discussed through multiple facets, that they're not just ghost hunting, that they're also looking at the contactees, that they're also looking for cryptids, that they're also talking about witchcraft, that they're also doing tarot card readings, that they're also doing, you know, quasi-pseudo-scientific experiments, that they're also just doing regular ghost hunting methods. Like, the fact that it blew people's minds when they were like, what am I watching? Because I thought this was about goblins and now they're doing witchcraft. Like,
yeah, yeah. It
I
covers
think
all different
was,
genres. Yeah. It's very interesting like that. That's why I really liked a lot about it.
I think that's something people need to see.
Yeah. It's very strange. Yeah. It inspires a lot of passion both ways. I've seen people who get angry, but it's like, why the fuck are you angry? Like, why? That I don't understand. That I don't understand just in general. Like, I don't get angry about all that much in this field unless it's, like, people behaving badly. But, you know, but if it's like, I don't like that show, I don't like that people like that show. It's like, why? Like that shouldn't – that. That your anger is inside of you, man. That's inside of you. It has nothing to do with this show. So that's kind
right.
of, that's, you know, it's very,
yeah,
I feel like I get confounded by people who get angry about it. It's like, there's no reason, calm down. There's no reason to get angry, you know? It's very weird.
Well, and there are real world issues that demand your actual anger.
Absolutely, yeah.
Right? Like, we live in a world where there is some shit going on that demands your passion and your anger. Like, if you're wasting all of that potential energy on a television show or a movie, like, you might need to rethink the work you need to do on yourself.
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure. But I think also this is, I think, a problem with, in a sense, a lot of these fields where it's like some of these folks, not all of them, okay, so I don't want – don't get mad at me, folks. But some people are just so focused on their thing that, like, that's all that matters to them. And it's really kind of – in this world we're living in now, that to me is very off-putting, you know. I think – like, best example would just sort of be, like, and again, I don't want to talk about everybody. Don't get mad, folks. I'm just sort of making a generalization. But people who are so obsessed with this UFO disclosure thing, and it's like, dude, they're not going to, like, I'm sorry. I don't want to be an asshole, but it's like, I personally am not, I don't want them to disclose the secret of UFOs right now. We have enough going on. We don't need fucking aliens in this bouillabaisse of chaos that is 2020. So there are people who are just so obsessed that they don't, that's all that matters. That's all that matters is whether or not this thing's ever going to be revealed to the world. And it's like, have you looked at the fucking world? Have you looked around? Like, why the, this is not, again, it's not the time for aliens, but that's my soapbox rant. But I think you kind of, I mean, what do you think of that sort of tunnel vision that is unfortunate, I think, in some of these folks?
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, first of all, this is not the time to drop a truth bomb that there's aliens, right? Like, this isn't the state of the world that you want it to be. This isn't the people that you want to be telling you. Like, first of all, like, I've never understood – I posted a tweet today, which was, in essence, I've never understood people who say, like, we know that the government and government agencies and military and former and current military and government people, we know that they've been lying to us for 50 years. So they just need to tell us the truth. Why? Why in the fuck would you trust someone who's been lying to you for 50 years?
Exactly. Exactly. Well, that's been one of my things on the show a long time. It's like, do the fucking work. Like, we should be able to figure this out. We don't need them to tell us. We should be able to figure it out. Just because we haven't been able to figure it out yet, I don't think it's time, you know. It's a very cheating, skip to the back of the book move. It's like, just figure it out. Just figure the fucking thing out. Fuck the government. We don't need them to tell us. We'll figure it out. So, you know, it's taking a while, but we'll get it.
Sure. And if it's, you know, here's the other thing, too. Like, this idea that, well, you know, they're the government, they have the most money, they have the best technological equipment, they're the most well-equipped to be the ones who would find out if there are aliens. Anybody who has studied the UFO and alien phenomena knows that that's not fucking true, because aliens and UFOs show up to normal people.
Right.
They show up in a field. They show up in someone's bedroom. Like, you don't need to have 55 years working for the military, and you don't need to be an elected official for 70 years to be the fucking person who knows about aliens. Like, they have aliens and UFOs have been doing disclosure since they've been around. I'm sorry it's not happening the way you want, which is for the liars to admit they were lying and tell you the truth. That's outrageous. You should be listening to the people who have been telling you the stories that they've been telling for millennia, and trying to figure out where the truth is in those stories.
Exactly. Exactly. So I think, yeah, I think people need to, I guess, sort of, yeah, sort of on my rant about tunnel vision, people need to kind of have a broader perspective of, like, what's going on here as far as and I think you hit the nail on the head, where it's like, half the people don't trust the government anymore, so, or more than half, I mean, let's be honest, but who the fuck is going to believe if the president came out tomorrow and said aliens were real, like he teased last night on being interviewed by his son there, that got all the UFO world aflutter, even though he seemed to confuse Roswell in Area 51.
He was absolutely, absolutely, Trump thought Roswell was Area 51. He doesn't know the difference between
–
he doesn't know the difference between the two. He was just riffing like he always does. He has no idea what's going on. I have argued for decades, and talking to people outside the UFO community, people who are just policy experts and policy wonks, I talk to them. The last person that you're going to give the secrets of the universe to is the President of the United States, because at most, that guy is going to be in a position of power for 8 years. That's it.
Right, right. So they'd only tell him if like, he really needed to know. And so far,
yeah,
they haven't needed to know.
Right. And you know full well with any president, like, you could march some military guy in. I'm sure that, you know, whether it's Trump or Obama or, you know, whoever, like, they're not keeping up on current UFO trends. Like, some random military guy could walk into the Oval Office and show any of them, you know, the Trent photographs and say, like, these are UFOs. They are real. That's all you need to know, Mr. President. And the president would think, oh, fucking UFOs are real, because that military guy told me. Like, presidents can be tricked by their staffers as well. They're not keeping up on fucking UFOs. They've got other things to do.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, I also think people don't consider sort of like, okay, so what? They come out and tell us. So now what? Like, the aliens are going to, like, they're going to fucking come and live here? Like, we can't even get along with each other. Where are they going to live? What are they just going to start? Like, because they see sci-fi movies where it's like aliens and humans are interacting and living together. It's like, again, it's like we can't get along with each other. So now this is, again, not the world. We're not ready for aliens, man. We're not ready whatsoever for aliens.
I don't mean to be too controversial and whatever, but I was having a private conversation. I won't mention the person's name, but the conversation at one point, I said, you know what? Actually, due to the amount of kind of conservative and even kind of quasi-racist thought that permeates some of the weird supernatural communities, there's a lot of people who are going to be fucked up if extraterrestrials show up and they're black.
Yeah, well, they'll be, yeah. Well, they won't even look anything like people,
but
presumably.
They'll be good grays.
I mean, even if they were the textbook grays, like, you know.
Yeah, but what happens? But honestly, like, there's the thought experiment. That's what I challenge people to, like, imagine. Imagine that aliens do land, and imagine that they're humanoids, and imagine that they're black. Are you not going to believe that? Are you going to believe that they're... Like, what's going to be your mentality?
I'd be fine with it. I don't know what these other, you know, I don't know.
That's what I mean.
It would be crazy. You know,
yeah,
it would be absolutely crazy.
there's a science fiction story, I can't remember which author wrote it, it's from the 1950s, but this giant UFO lands in Washington, and it's a short story, it might even be Arthur C. Clarke, but there's a short UFO story where a giant UFO lands in the middle of Washington, D.C., and the aliens get off, and they're the ancestors of Native Americans, and they walk into the White House, and they go, where are all our people?
Right, right. Well, like what you're saying with the aliens, too, it's like goes to the idea of like how Jesus has slowly turned into a white guy. You know, it's like people can't
right.
Like if Jesus came back, what would happen? People would freak the fuck out. Though all the racist people would, you know, they'd be
yeah,
like, no,
sure.
You can't be Jesus. You don't look anything like Jesus. It's like, I
right.
am, dude. I don't know what to tell you. So it's yeah. So we're not ready for aliens, folks. Sit tight on that. I feel like if it was going to happen. I feel like the best time for it to happen would have been like the late 90s, before, like maybe like 96. I don't know why I have that feeling, but it was like things seemed a lot more peaceful back then. Not, the world certainly
well,
wasn't as good for people now, for then as it is now for a lot of folks, but there seemed to be the world seemed to be less volatile in general.
Well, you know what's crazy is, you know, 96. You're right at the kind of beginnings of the actual disclosure movement. Like that's right around the time that it started. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, when you started, and that's the other thing too, like, I don't even know, you know, I was watching the conversation today because there were a bunch of UFO people saying like, let's not bring politics into UFOs. And it's like, but you're part of the disclosure movement, which is means you're looking for the government to say something like, in the 90s and early 2000s, there were groups like XPAC, which was a political action committee to get governments to talk about UFOs. Like, that's a part of the history, too. Like,
right.
Disclosure is about politics.
Yeah, it's funny. Yeah, you can't – the same – you know, some of the people who say don't put politics into it, then the next thing they'll say at some point down the line is like, we need congressional hearings about UFOs. It's like,
right.
Well, who the fuck do you think's going to preside over those hearings, dude? Like, that's why
right.
you got to vote. it might drive you crazy. It's like, oh, so
madness.
We're just – yeah, it's nuts. Now, I thought it was interesting. I think you said this earlier and came up in the book. I thought it was so refreshing. And it kind of it's kind of within the realm of what we're talking about here, and that was where is it? You were talking about conspiracy theorists, and you kind of made it sound like originally you used to think that sort of the oddballs and the kooks were more the outliers, and you know the other people in conspiracy world were generally thoughtful, inquisitive people who questioned the status quo, if you will, and then you say. That you say right there, I was wrong, and that you've watched the conspiracy world go crazy, which is exactly kind of how I've felt in the last, 15 years since the buzz wore off on 9/11. It got really dark after that, and it's gotten progressively more dark to the point now where conspiracy theories used to be a lot of fun, but there's nothing – I haven't seen a fun – aside from Flat Earth, which I love, I haven't seen a really – fun conspiracy anymore. They're few and far between. It's conspiracy thinking is very, very dark, and I don't know if you've noticed this. We've talked about this with our mutual friend Aaron Goulias in the past. It's like the people all the time I was coming up, it was like, we got to stop this New World Order. We got to stop the New World Order. And now it's like somehow the conspiracy people have completely switched sides where it's like, we need to make sure we need to make sure that our version of the New World Order prevails. And it's like, this is fucking scary now. It's getting, you know, it's getting militant and scary. That's a
there
long
was,
sort of observation, but talk about the change that's happened in the conspiracy world.
You're absolutely right. There was a period of time where there were a very small group of people who were nefarious and they were conspiracy theorists and they thought, you know, certain cabals of people ran the earth and that was the way it was and that's only the way it was going to be. But the bulk of people, at least that I was in touch with in the 80s and 90s, conspiracy theory was mental gymnastics. it was a way to train yourself to think more logically and more seriously, to track down bullshit, to see the flaws in arguments. It really was a way to strengthen your brain. And it was fun because it did. It allowed you to kind of rhapsodize with other people eloquently or ineloquently about the possibilities, and you could see where things would fall apart. Like, I remember the first time I had a conversation about Area 51. This is probably about 90 or 91. I was having a kind of deeper conversation with some conspiracy theorists at that time about Area 51. And one of the guys at the table said, "So they've got a huge underground base there, right?" And we all said, "Yep." And he said, "How many people do you think work there?" And the number was anywhere from like 500 to 5,000. We were all talking about how many people were probably in the giant base underneath Area 51. And this guy laughed and he said, "Who takes the trash out?"
Yeah, exactly.
Like 5,000
yeah.
people. Like, and so what conspiracy theory did was it challenged you to think, like, how many FEMA camps would Clinton have to build to put every conservative in a FEMA camp? Like, and then who guards those camps? And then who patrols those camps, who takes out their garbage, who feeds them, who takes care of them, who monitors them? And, you know, the theory would break down fairly quickly because you were using critical thinking. And then something happened, and probably right around 9/11, where conspiracy theory went from rhapsodizing and mental gymnastics to just accepting what certain conspiracy theorists said and not thinking at all beyond it. People were like, "Oh, this guy has it figured out." We're right back to where we started again with, when someone tells you they've got it figured out, you're leading down a dark and dangerous road, because now
yeah.
that person is going to say and do whatever they can to keep you on board. And at one time, conspiracy theorists were these individuals who, like I said, waxed eloquently or ineloquently about ideas. And what it turned into was 10 or 12 people have ideas. We're all going to believe in those single ideas and not think beyond them. And that has led us into horrific territory. Like you said, somewhere along the line, everyone was afraid of the New World Order. And now, 15, 20 years later, people want their version of the New World Order. Like, it's very strange. It's really disconcerting to me, and it's really actually troublesome to my brain.
Yeah, I read some quote somewhere recently. There was something, I'm going to butcher it, but it was something along the lines of, like, when the militias start carrying the flag of the government or whatever, then it's like, then you should start to worry, because then they've co-opted the resistance, if you will. So
right.
It's like, that's kind of how I feel nowadays. It's like, no, we're supposed to be toppling the New World Order. What? But they believe it's really, have you looked at this QAnon stuff?
I mean, I have, but I've the only reason I've looked at the QAnon stuff is because I used to have, back in the late 90s, early 2000s, one of the jobs that I used to have was I was in advertising. And so I used to work with some companies who did kind of proto pre-LARPing and pre-ARGing. So it was like they were doing advertising as augmented reality gaming or as live action role-playing. And
yeah.
as soon as I saw Q pop up, I was like, oh, this is a LARP. Like, someone has created a live action role-playing game and people think it's real.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was sort of getting around to, where it's like I don't follow the ins and outs of the theory so much as have been watching this grow. It's really astounding to see, because I said before, like, I have a certain love for the Flat Earth because it's so goofy and it got so popular and everything. It's not as popular anymore, I think, because of this Q stuff. I think this is usurped its spot. But the sheer creepy popularity of it is unsettling. Like, because you don't see too many like conspiracy. You see the guy out, like Alex Jones. You see him out with like the bullhorn out in front of where they're having Bohemian Grove or whatever, or Bilderberg Group or whatever. But it's like now they're like waving Q flags and holding up a Q sign. They have merchandise and shit. It was like, this is not anything like I've ever, you know, you don't see people running around with a fucking moon hoax shirt on. So it's right. it's a very militant conspiracy theory that is so fucking detached from reality that that's the other scary part. It's like, wow, they believe in all kind, like they think this Q character is like a god. It's like a cult. He's like a godlike figure. It's like, you don't even know what the fuck this thing is.
Right. And what's really funny about Q, and the reason that I thought it was a LARP, is when I was dealing with the people who were creating augmented reality games and live-action role-playing games for advertising, one of the things that they discussed was, we have to find a way to kind of get people to buy our product, but we have to get them to think that they are coming up with the idea. And so what happened was, is they would create these advertising campaigns that were very open to interpretation. And so when people would figure out what they were doing, they'd be like, oh, this is my thing. This is what I'm supposed to be doing. This is, I figured it out. And Q is very much that way. Q is like, okay, here, I'm going to show you some numbers, and I'm not going to tell you what they mean. And then people search for the meaning in them. And when they find whatever the meaning is, and of course they're biased, so they find their own biases in their own meanings, they think that they're now a part of it because they've discovered the secret meaning, when in reality it was just some random fucking numbers that somebody posted somewhere.
Yeah. It's pretty
but they have a sense of purpose now. They feel like they're on the inside. Everybody wants to be part of the cool kids club. Everybody wants to belong to the clique. Like, you know, I even said, I think I said this in the book when I was talking about flying saucers and disclosure. Like, I always try and think beyond my own thoughts. And whether it's, you know, or some of these conspiracy theories, like think 30 years beyond it, think 50 years beyond it. Try and hypothesize about that. I say about flying saucers, right? Like, if an advanced extraterrestrial race is disclosed and they have technology that is akin to magic and they are 100,000 years older than us and they give us that technology and they are going to be our space brothers and sisters and we're going to traverse the galaxy together, are you really going to remember, like, do you really think that the human race is still going to be in a mindset at that time where we stick our fingers in our ears and go, ha ha, I was right, you were wrong? We will have progressed and transcended beyond that.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Why
well,
are you there now?
Exactly. Yeah. There's a really weird, I don't know, it's like the reverse of like sunk costs, or maybe it is sunk costs, where it's like they're part of the motivation for some folks in these fields, especially UFOs, but I'm sure with Bigfoot and maybe even ghosts, although it's like, I don't even know, we can kind of explore that in a minute, but it's like, I don't even know how you'd like close the book on ghosts, unless you could like get one in a jar or some shit, but you know what I'm saying? But it's like, but people don't, I lost my train of thought now, but I'm trying to think of what you just said.
Go ahead.
No, you go.
I was going to say, what you have to remember is whether it's ghosts or Bigfoot or aliens, like those are radical shifts to an entire planet's consciousness and understanding of themselves within the universe. Like, ghosts, what happens after we die, extraterrestrial life, we're not alone in the universe. Like, these transform humankind.
Yes.
For the rest of history.
That was what set me off.
Yeah.
Exactly.
For the rest of history, we're not going to be these people that we currently see once we know the answers to these questions. And if you know that you're going to be transformed into something better, why don't you start today?
That's sound advice. Yeah, with the train of thought that I lost, pulled back in the station now. The idea that, like, why? Yeah, there's an unnecessary like, need for some folks like that to be proven right about it. And it's like, I don't really, that shouldn't really be your motivation either, just to be proven right. Because like you said, and, you know, this has come up in other conversations in the past, too, where it's like, okay, you're right. You're going to get, like, a fucking week to enjoy it, maybe, at best. Like, and everyone's going to fucking move on. It's like, and that's the other part of it. I think I've always said this about the UFO field, and I guess in a way it's kind of the Bigfoot field, too, and, you know, again, unless you can get a ghost in a jar, maybe it applies to the ghost field, too, but it's like, it's interesting that these movements, their goal is to make themselves obsolete. Their ultimate, the end game is to go out of business. Because once we know what the deal is with UFOs, like, once they capture a Bigfoot, I don't know necessarily, again, maybe for a few weeks, few months, the people from Finding Bigfoot will be, you know, they'll be celebrated and interviewed, and people will want to know what they think about it. And then it's going to be like, okay, here's Dr. so-and-so, and here's, you know, animal expert, Dr. this guy, and they'll handle the Bigfoot from there. And for all the shit that these guys like Neil deGrasse Tyson give about UFOs and everything, all the UFO folks are like, oh, you're so wrong. This guy's so wrong. He's such a jerk, and you know, and like, I hate to tell you guys, but the heartbreaking truth is, if they disclose the truth about UFOs tomorrow, Neil deGrasse Tyson is not going to be laughed out of the scientific community. He's going to be the first guy they fucking call, and they're not going to call people from UFO world. It's just not how it works.
Yeah. I mean, I was talking to someone earlier this week, having a conversation about the fact, because he was saying, like, will ghost stuff ever be, you know, a legitimate science? And I told him, I said, like, well, once something is figured out, whether it's ghosts or UFOs or Bigfoot, like, if we just put it under the paranormal umbrella, once something paranormal is understood, it's not paranormal anymore. So, no. You know, the fields of psychiatry and psychology grew out of paranormal research. The Psychical Research Society in the 1800s, who studied recovered memories and past trauma and how that affected the human condition, that was psychical research. It was studying the psyche. It was studying the mind. And as they started to figure out patterns and forms, even though psychiatry and psychology are soft sciences, those things that got figured out were put into a new category. They were put in the category of psychology and psychiatry. And what's left is ghosts and ESP and that type of stuff. And when that stuff gets figured out, that will get moved into its own branch of science. But once it moves into its own branch of science, here's the other thing, too. This is why I talk about there being a need to be philosophical about this stuff. Once that stuff becomes science, once Bigfoot becomes science, once UFOs become science, once ghosts become science, if they ever do, then that means there's going to be rules to how you investigate it. And it's not going to be fun anymore.
Right, exactly. It would be interesting to see. Like, let's say they capture a Bigfoot. I'm sure more people would go out and try and get a Bigfoot, but eventually it would change the whole dynamic of it. The mystique of these mysteries would dissipate, I think, very fast, and then people they'd move on to something else, I guess, you know?
Yeah, and, you know, someone was upset with me a couple weeks ago because of something I wrote, but when you were talking about these fields trying to make themselves obsolete, I don't know, it's not in Theoretical Weirdo, but it's in something else that I wrote, where I said, try and imagine a world, though, where everything is explained, where the stars have been counted, all of the atoms have been numbered, the secrets of life and death have been discovered, extraterrestrial life is known, every single thing to know is known. In that moment, when everything is known and written in books for all of human history, for all of eternity, what the fuck else is there to do? who cares by that point? You live in a collective yawn for eternity because there's nothing else to think about.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I thought about that. I didn't come up with it in the same – your way makes sense. But, yeah, I thought about that, where it's like, well, what would happen if all this shit went away tomorrow? Like, what would you do? I remember one guy
yeah.
actually asked that a few people, and I asked a guy, a MUFON guy from New England, and when I was when I filmed this ill-fated idea for me doing anything on television, but I asked Rich Dolan, Stan Friedman, and this MUFON guy from New England, and Rich Dolan and Stan, you know, to their credit, they'd be like, well, I'd want to know if we found out what it was, I'd want to know, like, how it applies to what I know and figure out where I was wrong, where I was right, and, you know, that kind of thing. And the other guy was just like, I'd probably go fishing.
Yeah.
That was it. I was like, I think you'd see it break down, like, along those lines in a lot of ways. People would just be like, all right, case closed, I'm out. You know, there's no
well,
point.
Here's, and the other thing is, too, you go back to, like, disclosure movement, right? So the disclosure movement is the government admitting that there's UFOs, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, aliens,
so,
really. I mean, I think in their heart of hearts, they really mean aliens. But the
okay, so
you know,
the,
they'll split
the
hairs.
Disclosure...
They'll split hairs with you and go, "I never said aliens," but it's like we all know you fucking
okay.
mean aliens.
So the disclosure movement is the government admitting that aliens are real. That's the movement. That's what they want. They want the government to admit that aliens are real. Okay, so your movement isn't that you want the government to tell you the truth.
Right, exactly, yeah.
It's that you, right? It's you want the government
yeah.
to tell you aliens are real, whether or not they are. Because
right,
they have been telling you, they've been telling you they're not for 70 years.
Exactly, exactly. And if the government came, if the truth was that the government doesn't know, they wouldn't fucking believe them anyway. So
right.
they're only going to believe what they want to hear. So
right,
you know, it's a
and who the fuck wants to? I mean, honestly, like who the fuck wants to belong to that? Like I don't want to be in a relationship. Any type of relationship where the person just tells me what I want to hear over and over and over again.
Exactly. So, yeah. Well, it's really important to these people. I don't understand it, but it's.
I guess.
Yeah.
We want the government. We want the government to tell us what we know is already true. That makes no fucking sense whatsoever. If you already know it's true, who the fuck cares if the government tells you?
Based on everything I've seen the last, like, year, or say in 2020, like, again, the logistics of disclosure to me, no one ever talks about that. It's like, so what,
yeah.
now what? Now we can't leave here, so are they gonna show us how to leave here, or are they just gonna come here? You know, no one ever talks about that shit. It's like they're going to give us fantastic stuff. Well, where the fuck have they been the last 3 months? Because people are dying, like, left and right.
Right.
Where's all this fancy, secret, hidden alien insight? It's like, oh, they only gave us
yeah.
info on ships. They didn't tell us anything about medicine, turns out. So
we only have
spaceship parts.
Yeah, and don't forget, too, they've probably for some reason, these hyper-advanced extraterrestrials have revealed themselves only to certain countries.
Are you
only
asking
to
me,
the
or
leaders?
Just sort of putting that out there in the ridiculousness of...
Yeah,
of,
just putting it out there in the ridiculous world. They've picked certain countries and certain leaders and certain governments to reveal themselves to. Why? Why? Because we broke ourselves up into illusionary borders, they somehow follow those illusionary borders too?
Yeah, exactly.
Isn't
why would
it?
They, yeah. Why would they even honor any of our borders? That wouldn't
yeah.
make any sense to them.
Yeah.
You know, we're just one planet altogether, probably in their minds. So.
Right. Yeah, we're earthlings to them, right? Like, we are earth creatures.
Yeah.
In this, probably in, like, that's the other thing, too. I mean, that's why, you know, something like Douglas Adams is so funny, right? Like, we wake up one day and the dolphins are gone. Like, maybe they don't want us. Maybe they're here for the ants. Maybe they're here for the cats.
Exactly. We don't know what, we don't know what any of that, what they want at all. So it's always, that's the other, I've often sort of mused on that, where it's like, maybe they just don't want to tell us because it's bad. So you can't put that genie back in the bottle. So you can, I don't necessarily, we don't know anything about these. That's again, that's why I say we should just figure it out on our own. We'll just figure it out, you know? It's going to take time, but we've only been trying it for like 50 years.
Right. It's going to take time, obviously. And by figuring it out on our own, that means that we're going to have to talk to each other. We're going to have to talk to a variety of different type of people with different ideas, with ideas that are contrary to our own. We're going to have to listen to people who don't look like us and sound like us. We're going to have to discuss with our larger family these ideas. That's amazing. That's the process of real disclosure, is getting to know your earthbound family, not waiting for someone to parrot back an idea that you already have.
Yeah. Well, it's an interesting, we're winding down the thing now. So, I've enjoyed this conversation
quite
a bit.
What are we at now? How long did we go?
A couple hours. You want to talk for a little while longer?
No, I got to go and check on my parents.
All right. You said that like
you were
shaming me into leaving. So I didn't
shaming me about leaving. I didn't realize that we had talked for so long, and I tend to just babble. I love it though. No, but for your listeners who don't know, I'm a full-time in-home caregiver for my parents. So one of the last podcasts I did, this is actually really nice because one of the last podcasts I did, at the very end, my father was screaming at me, and I told them to leave it in the podcast so people could get a real idea of what my life is like every day.
Nice. So folks can get The Theoretical Weirdo on Amazon, right?
Yeah, and if they don't want to pay a giant, huge corporation, they can email me, John, at Weird Lectures, and then, you know, PayPal me direct, and I can just send them one. I know a lot of people don't want to feed the corporate machines.
Let me ask you one more question, just sort of take it out on this one. But what's the website for people to check out the, you know, what's your hub? What's your website?
WeirdLectures.com. I used to do a podcast called Realm of the Weird. Those are all still up. They're pretty enjoyable. That's RealmOfTheWeird.com. And then all my social media is just John E. L. Tenney. So Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, it's all just John E. L. Tenney. Or you can Google John Tenney Weirdo and follow it down all the rabbit holes.
There you go. Yeah. Now, the one thing I wanted to ask you about is that kind of just popped into my head, but I had thought about it before, and the little British lady will take us out, and we'll just kind of dribble over the hour. It'll only keep you for like another 5 minutes, but I want to thank Eaten by Bears, who showed up really late into the show and didn't say anything in the chat room, but I see you, Eaten by Bears. Jim Vujovic, Sasquara, and Zach Copley, who had a lively conversation in the chat room tonight, and all the folks out there who listened live here on BOA's Summer of Strangeness with John Tenney. What I'm interested in, I love this conversation, and I do love sort of smashing the fourth wall on the show. Talking to you tonight was just great. Because you exist outside the fourth wall like I do, so it's been a fun conversation. As someone who sort of watches the field, and I know you're very prolific, I guess, how has this whole pandemic thing impacted you? Because I don't even do many events, and I've, all of my travel plans for the year were completely canceled. I was going to go to, like, 3 or 4 places, different events and shit, and none of that's happening. So I guess, what's your perspective on how this has impacted the community?
It's impacted it strangely in the sense, I mean, I canceled, all my events are canceled too, obviously. I try and do podcasts here and there just to keep up on stuff. I think that's what most people are doing. Personally, I mean, this has really given me time. I really do think that people in this field need to be introspective, and I think that this is a forced introspection. I know that's uncomfortable for some people, but this has given me even more time to think about the things that I think about. Also, you know, I've been fairly busy the past 4 or 5 years, and so my files have gone completely apeshit. So I've been recategorizing, reclassifying, going through all of my old files from old cases, finding things that I forgot about, which has sparked new ideas. And I think people should be doing that too. I mean, for all of the hindrances that come with the internet, like, there's some good things too. We can communicate with each other now. People are starting to show who they actually are, which I think is a good thing. There's a lot of good discourse happening, both about the paranormal community and who human beings are as humans. And, I mean, I think overall, you know, aside from the horrific deaths of everyone, the pandemic has, I think, for me, given me real, larger, deeper insight into this seemingly strange world we live in. It's made me more kind, for sure. It's made me more kind and caring.
Yeah, I feel you, man. It's it's been sort of a transformative. I get, like, it has been incredibly tragic for, you know, hundreds of thousands of people, because for every person that's died is, like, they have family, man. So, like, people who are like,
right.
Oh, it's only 100,000. It's like, no, it's like 100,000 times 10. Each person has probably 10 people that care about them, I hope. So, you know, and aside from all the folks, you know, who are really struggling because of all this, it's like, it's kind of the cliche where it's like, yo, learn a language. But it's like, if you, you know, it was instructive, I think. I tried to do it to sort of lean in a little bit to this and let it transform you in a way, because you're thrust into this situation as it is, with the world, like, shutting down and experiencing all these feelings. So it's like, kind of like that stop and smell the roses attitude and just, you know, that's kind of how I tackled it all.
We all, as human beings, we all have work that we need to do on ourselves. And I think a lot of people, for whatever reasons, didn't have the opportunity. And I think that this pandemic has given people not only an opportunity, but a real motivation to do that deep work, to recognize how precious our lives are and our friends are, and I do. I think it's been transformative and will continue to be. I don't think we're out of it yet.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah, yeah. I even was like calling ex-girlfriends and old friends from college and shit that I hadn't talked to like in 10 years or something like that. Because it was just like you're sitting around, you're wondering, oh, how are they doing? So yeah, it was a really interesting time. And you're right, we're not out of it yet.
And the sense, you know, this is, I had, last week, I had a very good friend of mine die. He had a stroke and an aneurysm, and it's a horrible thing, you know, 43 years old, and learning how to deal with the passing of a friend during all of this, you know. It's already a horrible situation, and then you add all of this other stuff on top of it, it really calls, the universe calls to you to reflect on what means something. And it's not
absolutely
arguing on Twitter.
That's that's for sure. That's for sure. Yeah. All right, brother. Well, I'll let you get going. Thank you very much. I really do appreciate it. For folks listening still, the website is weirdlectures.com, and the book is The Theoretical Weirdo, John E. L. Tenney. You can find him on Twitter. I love
the conversation.
Are there still
people listening, Tim?
They're not live listening, but they'll be listening later on MP3.
Okay. My last thing I'll say is how I end my lectures. So this is my last quote. All of the time and energy and effort and money and thoughts that you expend trying to communicate and make contact and have an experience with strange denizens of some other realm, I implore people to spend at least half as much time and energy and effort and money trying to explore and communicate and have contact with the weird creatures that live around them every single day.
All right, there you go. Words to live by, folks. All right, thank you very much, John. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Tim.
Have a good night.
Have a good one.
There you have it, folks. That was John Tenney. I love that conversation. That was fantastic. That was like a workout. I love a good conversation like that on this show where there's a good back and forth, and we're sort of like it's, you know, just like sparring or something, but not in an aggressive way. I don't know, intellectually, you know, bouncing ideas off each other. I really really enjoyed that quite a bit. I love shows like that. So John Tenney, the book Theoretical Weirdo, the website weirdlectures.com. Next week on the program, it's going to be June 26th. We're going to be bringing back, I guess you could call him an old friend. He was on the show, I don't know, a couple years ago almost now. He's the guy behind, I don't know, I'm going to mess it up. I think it's the Goodbye Man is the thing. But Robert Schneck, who always makes me laugh on Facebook. And I've been reading a lot of his stuff, and he's been working on some really wild stuff involving autoerotic asphyxiation throughout history. So we're going to – he does weird history and strange stuff like that. So we're going to find out what he's uncovered with regards to autoerotic asphyxiation throughout history. So that one, you're going to want to put the kids to bed before we do that episode, I think. I'm interested in that because it's like weird things today have a long history sometimes. So something like that, I'm interested in finding out. How long has this been going on? You know, maybe he's dug up some case from England in the 1700s or something. Who knows? I wouldn't be surprised. But we're going to talk about that, and I'm sure we're going to talk about a whole bunch of other weird history stuff. He's a historian of the weird. That's his tag. You can find him on Facebook, Robert Schneck, S-C-H-N-E-C-K. As I said, he'll be on next Friday night, June 26th at 9 p.m. Eastern. Be there, be square. Until then, folks, this is Tim Banal, thanking you for listening and signing off.